B-Pod Studios.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Joining us. Oh, he's like my priest. Like I need someone to counsel. He's always got like words of wisdom. He's a great basketball man. He's always a calming force. He sees the light out of every tunnel, the escape route from every trap. He is, of course, the great Tim Legler on the Comcast Business Hotline. Lex!
Anthony, my son, what have you come for help for today, brother?
I can't take this team,
man.
I'm
going to help you, man.
This team is driving me insane.
The timing of this situation couldn't be much worse, honestly, right? What's going on with Joel? And by the way, I was traveling most of yesterday. I know he got the MRI. It's a strain, correct? So had they given him a time frame yet?
No. Yeah, he's cleared.
He's going to be playing in the next game? I thought he was going to take at least a week.
Yeah, no. Well, he's cleared. They're going to reevaluate him in a week.
Okay. Man. Tough timing, man. It's a very weird play the other night that took place when he actually hurt that. You can't believe that amount of contact can cause that, you know. But it's a tough ride, man. It's tough sledding for this team this year. This is a grind. If they're able to somehow get their act together as we head down the final stretch of the season and actually make a run in the postseason, it'd be pretty incredible based on the way that this regular season has gone for them.
Incredible, right? I mean, It's been so tough. I mean, the Ben thing is the real killer. Like, yeah, if Bede's right. Coming back, it's only going to be, you know, we're going to miss a couple games here and there. That's it. But the Ben thing is the killer. He's got to see how he responds to treatment. And if he responds favorably, they'll gear him up. He'll probably get about 2.5 weeks worth of games before the playoffs. If not, he'll have to have surgery.
Yeah, it's brutal because it's the kind of thing and the kind of injury, too, that... you know, it's you worry always in the back of your mind, even if he, you know, is able to get through his therapy and get to a point where he's pain free and he thinks he can go. It's the kind of thing that you do worry about recurring, and that's the brutal part of this. And the other thing for the Sixers, unfortunately for them, like their time frame is different than some of these teams. Their time frame is we put this thing together every single year, starting this year.
Right,
you're trying to contend and trying to win the whole thing.
Right.
Every year you don't, it's an empty, unfulfilling feeling. Like, this isn't something that you're building toward. Like, you made the decisions you made from a personnel standpoint, and you waited what you waited through at the beginning of these guys' careers, and you are now there. And every year you don't get it done, it's going to leave you very empty, and it's a lost year. And that's why this is such brutal timing for them and for him to be going through this. And, you know, obviously we all just hope he comes back and he stays back, but it's an area of your body that is so critical to a basketball player, and you worry about something like this recurring, even if he does get cleared to play at some point, you know, with a few weeks to go.
So, all right, let's go positive. Best case scenario, he comes back, it's the last week of March, he rolls through 2.5, the last, you know, 10 games or 8 games, and we're about playoff time. Can they still make a run?
The thing that you know, it keeps echoing in my mind when I think about this team, and there are some nights, obviously, you know, you watch him and you watch how dominant Embiid is and how he's, when he commits to playing a certain way, you go, man, you know, there's really no answer for him, and nobody has one of those, and we can actually control the game because we've got the only guy that can really play the way Embiid plays and dominate to the extent that he does. You watch him some nights and you feel that way. What keeps pounding through my head, very rarely, if ever, are you going to see a team that's this bad on the road then, you know, make a run through the playoffs.
Right.
Like there's something there, and there's a reason for that, and the inconsistency around that. That's something that, hey, you could try to ignore and put it to the side, but for me, you know, I'm not living and breathing it like the people in Philadelphia that, like,
right,
you know,
this
ruins their week when they lose games. I'm just trying to be unbiased in how I'm analyzing teams in 19 years of covering teams that are legit contenders, and you just don't see teams that are this, it's this drastic, the difference between the way that they play at home and the way they play on the road. So you think to yourself, well, can they win a series against anybody if they have to go on the road in the first round? it's concerning. You know, you say, well, can they win one road game in a series? Because that's what we're talking about.
Right, right.
That's all it really is.
Yeah.
But I think the bigger underlying theme is, what is it that causes them to be so inconsistent? That ultimately is what's going to get them in the end. The inconsistency that they have as a team, period. Because, look, the same thing, as great, as dominant as they are at home, look, they're going to get some team that's going to think the same thing. All they got to do, if they lose a game, let's say Philadelphia steals a game in the first round, they're playing in, let's say, Miami, right? And they get one of those. Well, the Heat are going to then be thinking the same thing. We just have to get one road game. And so the inconsistency, the underlying inconsistency of the Sixers, that ultimately will be what gets them in the end. And it's going to surface at the wrong time, in the wrong moment, in the wrong series. And that's what scares me about this team. Anthony, would I be shocked if the Sixers made it to the finals? I wouldn't be completely shocked because of their talent. But I don't think that's going to happen. The more I watch Milwaukee and when they had the other against Toronto, I think they have separated themselves now. I think it's a wrap in the East. I think the Bucks are going to be in the finals.
Wow. And that wasn't always the case with you. You still thought...
No, not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all. I picked the Clippers and Sixers before the season.
Yeah.
End up in the finals. And look, the Clippers are another team, you know, and I'm not going to be shocked if they get there either, but they're the one team of the, you know, handful that I thought were a contender, a legitimate contender. They're the one team that's got the most room for growth because they haven't been together. They haven't played their guys. I think they've had all of their guys together for six games all season.
Wow.
So like, you know, it's getting to the point now, you know, they had a terrible loss the other night against Sacramento. It's getting to the point where you go, when are you going to kick it into gear here? We got 25 games to go. You know, you need to start to see a rhythm and that dominant defensive effort nightly that we thought they could be when they put that team together. Haven't seen it from them either. So if I had to lay money on it right now, I mean, the Lakers have clearly been the best team in the West, and the Bucks have clearly been the best team in the East. So, you know, the Clippers will make it interesting. I don't know there's another team out in the West that I really genuinely believe could get to the finals besides the Clippers and Lakers. In the East, won't be shocked one bit if it's Toronto, Boston, Philly. I think any of those teams can challenge the Bucks, but the Bucks have been head and shoulders better than everybody.
Yeah, and, you know, and when you look at the East, how do you rank the contenders other than Milwaukee? So Boston had a big win the other night in Utah. Tatum played fantastic, and he's been on a tear. Heat struggling. The Raptors, you know what? They're an interesting team because I kind of like them. I wasn't as high on Boston, but they're playing. They got players. How do you rank the contenders?
Yeah, if I'd asked this question a month ago, to me it was definitely Toronto. Toronto, like, they're just, there's something about their toughness. They play great together. They got unbelievable amount of confidence because of what they did last year. They're incredibly well coached. So I was looking at them and saying, you know, we have the toughness of their two guards. Siakam is obviously, you know, a star offensive player. They defend. They play tough. They know they beat the Bucks a year ago. Even though they had Kawhi, they came up with a game plan to really make him look bad in the last four games of that series. So they got that in their back pocket. So all along, I thought it was them. The other night, when the Bucks went up there and won that game, that was very impressive for me because that's one of those ones you circle and you go, okay, I'm going to get a better idea tonight of exactly where Toronto stands relative to the Bucks. The fact that Milwaukee went in there and Giannis did not play well offensively, he looked a lot like he did last year in that series, and they still won by 11 on the road, that told me a lot. Their defense is better than it was a year ago. Their depth is better. You add a Wesley Matthews, you add a Marvin Williams. DiVincenzo is giving them a ton of energy. He wasn't there last year at the end of the year. This is now a team that is better than last year. They've taken a step forward. Even if Giannis struggles, they can now prove to me that they can go win on the road or they can go win a series against somebody. So I thought it was Toronto, but I would tell you right now, the way Boston's playing, Jason Tatum has taken his game to a place that's been amazing to me to watch because, in 2 months, this guy's almost 3 years into his career now, and in 2 months, because if you go back to early December, he was like, okay, still same words,
right.
Potential,
right.
Potential.
We talked about it. He was shooting like 33%, whatever it was, from the field.
I still kept watching him going, okay, the chemistry's better with this team. He looks happier, but Why am I watching games some nights when Jason Tatum plays an entire half and I don't really notice he's on the court? He doesn't go to the foul line. Like, what's up with this guy? Well, something happened over the last couple of months. He has now taken his game to a place where he's an all-league caliber forward right now. And he's doing it easy. I mean, the other night against Utah, he had 25 at halftime. He could have had 45 in that game if you know, the second half. It was like Jaylen Brown, Marcus Smart, some other guys got hot. He kind of became a decoy.
Yeah.
But what he is doing right now with his handle and his range, he's made more threes than anybody in the NBA in the month of February. Think about that.
That's crazy.
Jason Tatum. So for me, Boston now with the way he's playing and knowing they're doing this without Kemba, they might be the team. But it's one of those two. They're looking each other in the eye. Would not be shocked. Those two teams play each other in the second round. That's a seven-game series. And I wouldn't be shocked who wins that series. But I think it's one of those two right now against the Bucks. I just don't – the Sixers aren't quite on that level. And then Miami and Indiana, they just don't have enough in my mind.
Yeah, I agree with that. The Great Legs on the Comcast Business Hotline. It's 12 o'clock. And you're listening to 97.5 The Fanatic, WPEN, Burlington, Philadelphia, broadcasting from the Xfinity Studios, only from Comcast, where Beasley Media Group Station. Legs, let's look at the makeup, because we've talked so much about it. And let's take Harris for, let's take Tobias Harris. Can he be, and we talk about all the time about being aggressive and not getting caught in the passivity. Like, he plays with a passivity sometimes.
Yeah.
He's got to be aggressive. Can he be that guy? Because they still need him with, and especially without Embiid and or Simmons, they need him to do it.
Yeah, they do, and I think if you really look at the overall year that he's had, I mean, you'd have to be really pleased with the year Tobias Harris has had. I mean, really, honestly, the guy's about just under 20 points a game, and you know, there are a lot of nights you watch him when he gets into that mindset. God, he's good, because he can post, he can ISO a little bit, he can catch and shoot, he slashes well when he cuts from weak side to strong, so he finds ways to put the ball in the basket when he's in that mindset that, hey, it's my offense. I love when he plays that way. So you're asking me, I guess, can he do that for a sustained run?
Yeah, consistently, yeah.
Yeah, so you're talking about doing it, you know. I mean, look, if you go through three rounds in the East, and these are going to be tough series, and then the finals, you know, you're talking about playing 20 to 25 games. Can he do it consistently for that amount of time to help get them there? Like, average 20 in a series, in every series. Can he do that? I think he can, yeah. I've been very impressed with the year that he's had overall.
So, what's off-kilter? Is it architecture or coaching? What do they need to, you know, because this is the answer. I mean, let's face it. If this thing is a disaster and they're out prematurely, well, then they're going to look for a new voice. If, you know, they also have to decide whether or not there's architecture issues. How do you kind of view where they're at right now? Because they have all this talent, and yet they've underachieved.
Yeah, the pieces, look, the architecture and the pieces, the way they fit together is not ideal. When your best two players aren't necessarily complementary of each other offensively, which Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid aren't. I wouldn't describe them that way. Doesn't mean they can't coexist. It doesn't mean they can't win at a high level because they're both so talented. But in an ideal world, they're not necessarily the best complementary fits to each other. You're right about that. They can overcome that if, in my opinion, they had better leadership. So I don't think this is a team that you watch that you feel is extremely mentally tough.
Right.
And that comes, look, when your best two players are guys that, you know, for Embiid, you know, look, as great as he is, he gets wrapped up in stuff that doesn't have anything to do with winning sometimes. Like the way that he carries himself, the things he talks about, like, you don't know some nights if he's completely focused when he steps on the floor. And then for Simmons, he's more of a guy that leads, hey, I play hard as hell every night. That's my way of leading. But he's not necessarily a guy that's going to take control of the team and, like, direct traffic and make sure that everybody is so locked in when they go to play. And the great players in this league, that's the way they conduct themselves. That's what they do to make sure everybody's focus is in one place and we're really sharp going in. I don't know that they've got that kind of leadership. So the structure and the architecture isn't great. You can win with it. I don't think their leadership is great. I don't think they handle adversity particularly well. And that's why you see sometimes when they come off the court after a run is made and a timeout is called, I don't like the body language. I don't like the shoulders dropping.
Yeah,
I don't like the fact that guys walk to the bench and they don't speak to each other. Like, that's strange to me. You know, everybody's just kind of walking over there like zombies, and they're all, like, disconnected. And then it's up to Brett in the timeout to try to put the pieces back together. Let's see if we can go out there now and like, you know, feel like we still have a chance in this game, feel like we can stop this run. The look on their faces, it's like they don't believe. And that, to me, you know, every great team I've ever seen that won it, they believe, man. And that's what I loved about Toronto so much last year. They believe. And look, they had Kawhi. He helps you believe. I get it. But the team this year, when I watch the Raptors, they believe just as much this year. There's something about the makeup of their team, the voice of their coach. They buy into it. Their leadership is strong. You know, Kyle Lowry's a strong leader. Siakam, I think, has become a strong leader.
Yeah.
VanVleet's a tough guy. He's a leader, you know. So they believe it every bit as much this year as they did last year. And I don't know that the Sixers genuinely believe. And whether it's, you know, I don't believe in the message they're getting. They don't believe that they have the people there to navigate through the tough times. I don't know what it is. But there's nights you watch them and you definitely feel like there's a defeatist element that comes into them, that enters into their mindset and their psyche, that you just don't see in a champion.
It's the Anthony Gargano Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
Wow, man. Yes. That's talking about hitting the nail, hitting the sweet spot, man. Dude. Yes. They don't believe. So how do you get them? And you know, it's funny because you have Horford, who's supposed to be a leadership guy. You have Tobias, who, you know, it's funny, like, I'm in Milwaukee with them, and I'm standing next to them pregame in the tunnel. And, you know, they're in their huddle. And Tobias, no matter what happens out there, let's stick together.
Right.
Stick together. We're brothers. Let's stick together. That was his message. I heard it in my own ears. It was a great, perfect message. What is it? I mean, does that just not translate on the floor? Like, is it to have to be, does Simmons need to be, and again, it was a tough night because Simmons gets hurt 5 minutes into the game and it just blows everything up. But, you know, what can be fixed? Like, how do you fix it?
For me, as much as I admire the way Ben Simmons plays, and I'm not a person that's going to anymore, you and I have talked about it, I'm not going to haggle anymore about, you know, his inability to shoot the ball. Look, he is what he is. That's not going to happen. It's never going to happen. He is what he is, and that's pretty damn good because he does a lot of things to help you win. If I could inject some of what you're talking about into his personality, because the nature of the position, okay, dictates that you be a guy like that, that does a little bit more hand clapping, like, let's go, here we go, let's go, let's tighten up right now, let's lock in. Like, to get that from him would mean far more than anybody else on their roster.
Yeah.
Even Embiid, because of the nature of his game, the way he plays, how hard he plays, how hard he competes defensively. He has a lot of respect in that regard. If he were a guy that was more like, hey, let's go, you know, during a timeout, right. I'd love to see him take control of the huddle. I'd love to see it one time. Just take control. You know, you see that sometimes with some of these teams where a certain guy stands up in front of the players before the coaches even get over there because they're out on the court talking, to get up there and stand in front of those guys. And Kyle Lowry does it all the time.
Yeah,
look, Chris Paul does that. Like, look me in the eye right now. Listen. Here's what we have to do. Let's go. Let's focus. Let's lock in. Let's get this done. It creates a sense of unity and a sense of a bunch of guys collectively in this together that they need. And, you know, you talk about Horford. I've always considered Horford a great leader. The problem he's run into, it's a lot easier to lead when you're playing well if you're Al Horford, because It's not like he's 38 years old at the end of the bench and they just, you know, it's like Tyson Chandler, okay? He's not that. Where
right.
He's at the end of his career, we just brought him in just to be a voice. No, that's not what happened. They gave him a lot of money. They want him to really produce. He's not playing well. He hasn't fit in. He's not comfortable. It's harder then to have your voice resonate. It just is. I've played with guys like that that are in that spot. It's like they're trying to find their own game right now.
Right,
like that's
they're consumed, yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean? And it happens. So it's a lot harder for him to be focused on the leadership component and getting guys all pulling in the same direction when he's just trying to find a rhythm himself. Makes it a lot harder. It'd be easier for Ben because even on nights Ben doesn't score big, Ben does so many things, and he's playing so hard, and he's defending, and he's out there for 38 minutes, and all those things. It'd be easier if that was his personality type. That would carry over dramatically for this team. But, Anthony, at the end of the day, you said it. Look, if they lose, I don't know, first round, I don't think there's any question they're going to make a coaching change. If they lose in the second round, I guess depending on who that's to and how that series goes, that could also be the death knell. Now,
yes.
If they lose to the Bucks in the conference finals and they give them a competitive series, you know, I don't know that that necessarily dictates, hey, we're making a coaching change. But at the end of the day, it may take a new voice to see if a new voice can connect with these guys and get through to them in a way that makes them believe the things that we're talking about that they lack. That's where you go first. And then if a new voice doesn't affect it, that's when you start to go, okay, you know what? These pieces don't fit. They don't work. But I don't think we're there yet. I think the first thing you would do, if this flames out and it's a very disappointing end of the season and leaves a really bad taste in everyone's mouth, I think you look for new leadership for the team and see if a different guy, different voice, can be someone that can get more out of this
yeah.
and make them believe more than they do now.
Would Ben, it just sheer age, you know, we talk about guys in their like mid to upper 20s be like, you know, they just, it just automatically, you get it, right? Like the light goes on and you understand the league. You go to the All-Star game. You understand your peers. Now all of a sudden you want to win.
Yeah.
You've reconciled that you're going to eat all the shrimp cocktail you want, but yeah. now it's about, I got to win. Does
right.
that just click in? And
yeah,
when Ben Simmons is 27
ripen.
Years old?
You ripen. You get to the point where all the other stuff that was great and exciting and enthralling when you came into the league, the money, the stats, making the All-Star team, you know, he'll make all defensive team this year, like all those things. And it's all fun, man. You're living in the moment. You're a young guy making a ton of money, living a dream, playing well, playing in the All-Star game, highly regarded around the league. At some point, after several playoff failures, you start to realize at the end of the day, nothing else really matters besides that. And your focus starts to change a little bit, and maybe you mature a little bit. You feel more comfortable taking the reins of the leadership. And I don't think he's quite there yet. Now, look, there are some guys that never get that personality type, but they definitely conduct themselves in a way that where everyone knows nothing else matters but trying to finish the deal, man, and win. Because I'm tired of feeling like I'm contributing to a disappointment, and
wow.
and that kicks in. For different guys at different ages. And I don't know, when I watch this team, I'm not sure I get that feeling. Like, you know what I'm talking about? It's
yeah.
at all costs.
Yeah.
That's all that matters. And I don't know that this group is like that. It's a beautiful thing when you find that with a basketball
yeah.
team. And I talk about this all the time. When you find something beautiful, like when you know you got something special, even if you don't have as much talent, when you've got something special, it's when you get every single guy to understand, you cut just as hard knowing you're not going to get it as you do when we're running something for you. You trust that when it's your turn, the ball's going to come to you. If that's the right play and you're next around the horn and that's the next pass, you trust that it's going to come to you, and then those guys have to believe it's going to come their way when it's your turn to give it up. When you develop that trust, when I know for a fact I'm not getting hung out to dry defensively because someone is rotating over in the baseline if I could beat off the dribble, I know that for a fact, and then I'm going to sink down when a shot blocker goes to help me. Like, when you feel that trust amongst each other, now you got something special. I don't know that the Sixers have that across the board. I don't sense that they do. The Bucks clearly have it. That team's got unbelievable chemistry. and everybody accepts their role. They play together. Their leader, just, you know, with what he brings every night with his intensity, that team's got something special. Now, does the voice create that? Do the voice? I mean, in terms of the coach, do the players innately have to have that? Like, how does that all work? It's a combination of both. But whatever that stuff is, the Bucks have that right now.
You know what's funny? You said that. So I was talking to somebody from Milwaukee. I was with them. I was in Milwaukee last Saturday for the game, for last weekend. And I was talking to somebody from the Bucks, and he was telling me that Giannis just had a baby shower, right? And you know that every person on that Bucks team, every player, mm-hmm. was in attendance.
Right. Right.
Now, I mean, that says something, man, right?
Doesn't surprise me. I saw the game the other night when they beat Toronto, and I saw the post-game interview with Brooke Lopez, you know, right on the court. The sideline reporter got, I think it was Jared Greenberg, grabbed him. And he asked him, what does this team have that's so special? And he was part of that 60-win team last year. This is going to be a 68-70-win team this year. And he said, the number one thing, I know for a fact I can trust every single guy in that locker room.
Wow.
And he said, our philosophy is nobody ever gets hung out to dry on either end of the floor. He goes, and I've never been on a team where I knew for a fact that that was the case, that I have innate trust across the board on both ends of the floor, that only one thing matters out here, team success. That's it. And he said it's the first time he's been in that situation. And he was with the Nets. He was with the Lakers. He's a very good offensive player. Well, now, this is a dude that most people said couldn't guard anybody. And the other night, Stan Van Gundy is saying he should be the defensive player of the year. Now, that might be a reach, but what he's basically saying is, look at the dramatic turnaround of the way this guy is perceived now, because he's on a team where everybody is connected at the hip and everybody's pulling in the same direction. And you know what it comes down to also, Anthony? You have to be sitting there and you have to be pulling for the guy that, even if the guy's playing your spot, even if the guy, you're sharing minutes with someone. I played on 10 years in the league. I played on teams where I knew for a fact there were guys sitting on the bench and they were praying to God that the guy that was eating their minutes up would play poorly.
Yeah.
I played with teammates like that. I'm not saying this is the Sixers at all. I'm just
right,
saying
right.
This is what the Bucks have
right
now. And look, last year they came up short because the Raptors came up with an incredible game plan to stop Giannis. And they had a guy in an all-time great playoff run at Kawhi Leonard. And they won a championship. But the Bucks have absolutely bottled that and captured that, and nobody's having more fun than the Milwaukee Bucks. Nobody.
Wow.
And that's a great thing to watch, man. And I don't know, when I watch the Sixers, do you get the feeling a lot of nights that they're having an unbelievable amount of fun playing together? I don't. And
no, it's been a struggle all year long. It's been ups and downs.
It looks
and
like drudgery sometimes.
Yeah.
You know? And that's not just in the bad times. Like, even sometimes when it's really going well, it doesn't look like there's as much joy as there should be when you're in the midst of playing really well either. And that's, you know, it's personalities, it's leadership, it's the voice of the coach, it's all of those things that guys haven't gotten to the place yet where nothing else matters here, man. Nothing else matters but everybody in this room doing this thing collectively is trusting each other and making this ride, you know, much more enjoyable, because we all know that we have one goal in mind,
and that's
where the Bucks are at, and the Lakers actually look that way, man. They're playing that way too.
And you know, again, you have veterans, and you have Giannis, and it goes back to can this core? Because I still believe in the architecture. I just believe that these guys, they got to mature, and not even the Embiid as much as Simmons. Like, Simmons has to be the guy. I agree with you. He's got to be the guy that goes, all right, you know, let's go, man. What are you doing? You know, you got to get everybody in order. He's got to be that guy. Until he appears, they probably won't win.
No, you're right. And I think it's they're just missing something. And if, you know, again, to compare them to the Bucks, I don't think you can compare. I mean, obviously, Giannis is the MVP. Giannis is going to probably be the MVP again. But look at the starting lineup. Look at the talent between the two teams. Just go down, like, individually at each position.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the Sixers lineup compared to the Bucks. But when you watch the Bucks play and you watch a guy like Eric Bledsoe play, and the way that he is valued for what he does amongst his teammates and appreciated so much for that, when you look at a guy like Chris Middleton, Giannis, Brooke Lopez, Wes Matthews, like, look at the way that they connect to each other. And then guys come off the bench like DiVincenzo and Connaughton and these guys to give you all this energy. George Hill, the way that they play, there's no comparison between the connection that they have on the court and the way that they value each other for whatever it is they're bringing to the table. The Sixers, for all their talent, they are basically, they operate a lot of nights like five individual components.
Bleeping
right?
Brilliance!
I mean, did you disagree with that?
No! You're brilliant!
That's what it feels like to me, because I look at the year, like, if you just go down statistically, you go, Tobias having a good year. Josh Richardson having a hell of a year. Ben's having a great year. Look at Embiid's numbers. Right, you look at all these guys, but it's like they're not joined on the court.
No.
You know what I mean? It's not a flow to it.
No.
What they're doing. It's individual components, and on a given night, is this individual component going to play well or not? Whereas with the Bucks, it doesn't matter if Eric Bledsoe goes 3 for 12. It's everything has a flow and a rhythm to it, so it doesn't matter. And you don't look at individually what is Eric Bledsoe doing tonight. You don't. You look at the Bucks overall as a group. Look at their team play. Like, that's what you sense when you watch the Milwaukee Bucks. Maybe you get a little bit of eye candy with Giannis sometimes, you lock in on him, but for the most part, you're not looking at them and breaking them down individually. You're watching their style on both ends. With the Sixers, you're very much focused on each guy individually when they catch the ball. And that is the difference between watching individual components and watching a team. That, to me, is the biggest difference when you watch basketball.
Man, you are just brilliant. Bottle it up, Legs. Sell it. You're amazing. You should be behind a, you know, you should be stalking a sideline in front of a bench. That's for sure.
Your lips to God's ears, brother.
It'll come, man. Trust me. You will be coaching. You will have your team. You deserve one. Trust me. You deserve one. You will get it.
Appreciate that.
Thanks,
man.
Brother.
You know I want it, man.
I know. You'll get it. Thanks, brother. You're the best.
All right. Anytime, brother.
See you, man.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.